to another episode of Strictly Business, the podcast where we speak with key leaders across the media business today. I'm Corey Erickson with Variety Intelligence Platform. The video game industry has for years undergone consistent growth and experienced a considerable boost in attention during the pandemic, with the entire market reaching nearly $180 billion globally in 2020. One executive involved in several sectors of this market is Ophir Lupu, a partner and the head of video games at United Talent Agency, where his division represents top global developers, professional esports athletes, content creators, and live streamers. He's also been involved in negotiating several high-profile M&A deals through UTA, so now is as good a time as ever to hear from him about what's continuing to steer the games market forward. Welcome back to Strictly Business. We're here with Ophir Lupu, the head of video games at UTA. I like to get things started off with, you know, the development side of things at UTA and, you know, all these different game creators and studios you've been able to sign. Has there been anything recent going on there?
Well, hey, thanks, Corey, and thanks for having me. Really appreciate the time. Look, we are, you know, we're an active group of folks here at UTA who oversee our gaming business, and we're always on the lookout for developers to represent. We really want to represent the best and most talented group of developers we can on a global basis. You know, our business is, and our client base is really diverse and global in nature. I can tell you, I think we have almost exactly one client in Southern California. Our clients span the globe from Boston, Montreal, you know, Tokyo, Copenhagen, and even South Africa. And so we're always on the lookout to represent really great developers. And, you know, one of the areas that we're always focused on is representing really incredibly young and talented new studios. And I'm really happy that we've signed two new studios in that regard in the last few months here. One of them is incredibly talented, based in Copenhagen. They're called Die Gute Fabrik, and they made an incredibly wonderful title called Mutazione, which was nominated for all the awards in the last year or so. And we're really excited to work with them. So we're lucky enough to represent a studio called Niamacop, based in South Africa, our first studio in that region, who made a wonderful first title called Semblance, which also is recognized for a ton of awards. So we're really interested, Corey, in not just representing sort of the biggest and best names that are sort of household names in the gaming business today, and we do that, and we love doing it, obviously, and it's an honor to represent those folks. It's equally as important to us to make sure that we represent the next wave of creators in the space.
Oh, that's a really good point. I mean, the gaming industry it's become, you know, an incredibly vast global market. Newzoo has it at $175 billion globally as of November of last year. So yeah, in terms of signing development studios and creators, what specifically draws you to them in terms of the sort of games you're seeing coming from, you know, all these different places in the world? What is UTA really looking for in that regard?
Well, I think we always look for folks that have unique voices. I mean, I think that's the, you know, that's sort of a through line across all of our various divisions and clients that we represent, right? We want to represent people who have unique creative vision and voices that are going to stand out from the rest. You know, it's the thing that gets us most passionate about representing these people. You know, we talk about game in my groups. We talk about games all the time. We play games all the time. We talk about the things that inspire us. And that's really sort of been the guiding light. It's as simple as I can put it. You know, we want to represent people that inspire us and that we are passionate about. Certainly, you know, one of my favorite games of all time is Limbo, made by Playdead, based in Copenhagen. And it's an honor to represent them, right? It's exactly the kind of studio that we dream of representing.
That's great. You've also signed people from within Hollywood before too. I believe Justin Roiland some time ago came to you wanting to collaborate on games, correct?
Yeah, Justin is a longtime client at the agency on the more traditional television side. Obviously, is the co-creator of Rick and Morty and now Solar Opposites. which is incredibly funny. And, you know, I got a call from his, from my colleague, Matt Rice, who one of our board members, Matt at the TV group, who asked me to meet Justin. And I did. And Justin came into my office and was so passionate about games and sat down and basically said, I want to start my own game development studio. And after I tried to talk him out of that, I realized that he was serious about it. And we put a real plan together and put a plan in place for him to, you know, really understand, because he's a huge gamer, right? And really just deep, deep understanding of games and, you know, going all the way back to, you know, generations ago in terms of consoles, you know, really plays board games and understands game design actually like on a crazy level. But above and beyond that, it was really, how do we get him to understand how to build a development studio, how to get financing around it, and then how to strike relevant partnerships that can help take them to the next level. And Trover Saves the Universe was sort of the first game that came out of that studio. Squanch Games is the studio. And they're working on a unannounced, super cool new one right now. And I can't wait for everyone to see it.
So in addition to signing various development studios and game creators, UTA is also heavily involved in raising capital for a lot of these companies.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we recognized about 5 or 6 years ago that in addition to the primary function and services that we provided our clients, which predominantly in the game space had been doing deals with publishers for publishing services, and in many cases with, you know, some of the first parties and first party platforms for distribution deals, that we were starting to see this influx of investment coming into the space, equity investment coming into the space, whether that was from a handful of strategics, mostly out of Asia, whether it was from private equity and venture, some of the institutional investors that were really starting to see gaming as a viable investment strategy for them, that we wanted to make sure that we also had that ability on behalf of our clients to broker those types of transactions. And so myself and a number of colleagues went out, took our Series 7, did our studying, got licensed by FINRA and the SEC to do those types of deals. And it's been really successful. And it's been an incredible expansion of our of what we do for our clients, both on the capital raise side. I think we've done about 20 or so of those on the gaming side in the better part of the past 5 years, but also on the M&A side. We've advised numerous clients of ours in the sale of their studios, most recently representing Clay Entertainment in their sale to Tencent, which capped off, I think, the third sale we've done in the past 18 months across a number of different categories. So we're, you know, we're super excited to continue that line of business for our clients. It's an incredible time and opportunity for game developers, both on the publishing and distribution side, certainly also on the capital raise and M&A side.
Shifting gears a bit, in 2018, UTA ended up acquiring two different companies that were pretty invested in the esports world, PressX and Everyday Influencers. What spurred UTA to really sort of, you know, dive headfirst into the esports and live streaming space?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm glad you brought it up. You know, esports for us is a really important growth area. You know, gaming has been a big part of the growth of UTA on the digital side, and we think that esports is incredibly important and complementary. You know, what spurred it was, I'm fortunate enough to sit on UTA's investment committee, where we've been investing in companies for quite some time, early stage all the way to late stage companies across, you know, media, technology, and various entertainment sectors and consumer products as well. And that's, you know, companies like Lyft or Pocket Watch or Patreon or Masterclass. And one of the companies that we invested in that I was really an advocate for investing in, along with my colleague Sam Wick, who runs our ventures practice, was Cloud9, which is a leading esports organization, and they're very well known. Obviously, they're dominant in League of Legends and a number of other games in the esports sector. And that investment, which, you know, was our first investment into esports, our first investment in gaming, frankly, really, I think, gave us this incredible front row seat to what was going on in the esports world, right? Whether it was on the pro player side or the content creation side, I think it really helped give us even more certainty that we needed to be in a deeper way. And so Sam and I together really went out and developed this thesis that we should be in that space. You know, on UTA being the entrepreneurial company that it is, really gave us, you know, all the rope we needed to go out there and, you know, look at companies, look at the sector, come back, make a recommendation. We had met Damon Lau, who's the CEO of both those sister companies, and his team, and really felt like they would be an incredible fit at UTA. And we're so lucky to get them. And, you know, since then, I'm really happy to say that the thesis proved itself out.
Cool. So with a lot of esports athletes, you know, they're competing in a lot of virtual tournaments, sometimes, you know, live tournaments in stadiums too, you know, obviously before the pandemic changed a lot of that. But content creation is also such a key component for many, many esports athletes active in that space. When you're looking for teams or players to sign, how much is their attitude and, you know, sort of quantity of live streaming sort of affecting these decisions?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's also important to say, you know, esports for us is sort of a broad umbrella under which we really operate three sub-businesses, right? There's the business of representing pro players, and those are players who primarily play in the franchise leagues. So that would be mostly in League of Legends, and we represent a handful of really incredible players in the Call of Duty League. So that is sort of its own separate business unit, right? Then we represent streamers, of course. And those are some of the biggest names in streaming, whether it's Nick Merckx or Pokimane or Valkyrae, Disguised Toast, and many, many more. And then we also have, you know, a brand business where we've represented a handful of, whether they're consumer-facing brands or gaming companies, who are looking to really activate in that space. And we help advise them on a number of different ways. So that's sort of esports more broadly, I think, is important to just make sure that we touch on. With respect to signing new clients, look, I mean, going back to what I spoke about earlier with respect to our development studios, I think, you know, the number one thing that's important in representing and signing somebody is passion, right? Having that passion for them. You're going to be establishing a relationship, working with them daily, weekly, monthly, you know, 7 days a week, 365. I mean, this is a real, it's a, you know, in many ways, being an agent isn't a job, it's really a lifestyle. And if you're going to do that, you're going to have to be really passionate about the people that you represent, right? Coming down to it with respect to live streamers, you know, I think in many ways, what they do is this incredible blend of art and science. The science part is the technical aspect. Are you really good at playing these games? Because some of the most amazing gameplay sessions I see are from our clients on Twitch. I mean, it's incredibly skillful what they do, just in and of itself. The art of it is, can you be compelling to an audience for, I mean, you know, Corey, these streams sometimes last 5, 6, 7, 8 hours.
They're ridiculous.
It's really incredible what they do. Can you be compelling to an audience, right? In many ways, you know, I view Twitch and our live streamers as sort of the new late night couch, right? This incredible back and forth with guests that they bring on, that they co-stream with, the interactivity with the audience. You know, so it's got to be really compelling. So I think number one, you got to be passionate about the people you're working with. And second, there's this incredible blend of art and science that I think goes into being really great at it.
Yeah. One of the most interesting things about sort of, you know, the live streaming universe and all of the different people sort of making a living doing this is the fact that their medium of choice is something that often has them on stream interacting with fans for hours and hours and hours and hours at a time. A lot of studies that often look at sort of, you know, the most popular streamed games on Twitch often find that, you know, just the streamers chatting with their fans ranks as high as, you know, some of the most popular titles. So in that case, is there sort of, you know, given that Twitch in recent months has really sort of been, you know, cracking down on its terms of service and making sure, you know, it develops very strict protocols for player behavior and addressing misconduct and, you know, potentially offensive things that can be said on air, is there sometimes a bit of a concern with signing on players, especially from a crowd that often skews pretty young, that, you know, they need to understand that things like professional conduct and behavior are still sort of, you know, expected if you're going to be repping brands for hours and hours and hours at a time on stream?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's a timely question. And, you know, as a parent of two young kids, I'm really supportive of what Twitch is doing to try and ensure that, you know, the platform is really safe for not just the consumers and the participants, and but certainly also, you know, the streamers themselves. There's a lot of back and forth there, right? The question is, are we concerned about it? I mean, look, you know, to my point earlier, we tend to get a really good feel for who our clients are early in the process, even in the signing, you know, when we're signing them, right? The profile of our clients is pretty consistent, right? We really want to represent folks that were, again, not a passion is going to keep coming up here. Not only that we're passionate about, but that we feel, you know, really confident in taking to the market. Not everything's perfect. Not everything's always going to work out. And it's our job in those, thankfully, very rare, I can't even think of one, instances that we at least have the tools accessible to our clients to ensure that, you know, if they need it, that it's there.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how the pandemic disrupted the esports world and what companies heavily invested in this space like UTA had to do to adjust to the new reality there. Welcome back to Strictly Business. We're here with Ophir Lupu, the head of video games at UTA. Now, Ophir, when the pandemic happened, obviously it's something that affected, you know, virtually every sector that requires people to be physically present for anything, but especially in games and with esports, you know, developing into, you know, this gigantic universe of global events, you know, crowd filling stadiums and all that. What was sort of, you know, the initial impact when all these different shutdowns occurred, gaming events got canceled? Obviously, esports can, you know, exist and thrive virtually, but nevertheless, you know, there were a lot of developments in, you know, continuing this to be a worldwide operation. Call of Duty League in particular, I think, was really, you know, starting to ramp up things following the release of their Modern Warfare game, as well as, you know, prepping for the release of Warzone coming out not long after that. How did UTA, you know, respond to, you know, all the chaos of COVID?
The first thing and the most important thing always was ensuring that all of our clients were, you know, were safe and healthy and taken care of. So that's sort of standard across the board stuff. And look, what we did was we worked with our partners, right, to ensure that our clients were going to be well taken care of, whether that's our partners on the league side, on the team side, you know, the organizational side, and on their brand partner side. And, you know, those discussions happened early and often, and I think the results were pretty good. I mean, I think what's incredible about, you know, this pandemic generally is seeing the innovations and ingenuity of businesses across the board, and how they manage to sort of make it through. And the same can, you know, can be said about the gaming business, certainly the esports business. I think the quality of the production level was really high. The quality of the gameplay and the competition was really high ultimately. And we're really proud of our clients for getting through all of it, obviously. And we're really, you know, happy of the relationship and the working relationship we've got with our partners across the board there. And I think net, it, you know, we're glad it all turned out well. And the fans were able to watch and participate. And, you know, obviously, I personally can't wait to get back into a stadium full of people and see matches live. And I'm sure our clients can't either. I mean, that's there's certainly a connection there that you can't replicate.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as chaotic as everything has been with the pandemic, one of the most interesting things to sort of witness in the video game space was how, you know, massively popular games like Fortnite really sort of turned themselves into multimedia platforms beyond, you know, just characters, you know, battling each other for the top prize. You were actually, this had already been going on before the pandemic, as far back as when they sort of had their first concert with the electronic musician Marshmello, which arranging that was something you were actually involved with at the time, correct?
Yes. Yeah, no, that's... look, I think what Fortnite has done, generally speaking, in terms of creating this shared social space, is obviously been incredible. The Marshmello concert and all that went into it was just an incredible experience to be a part of, and I'll always remember that one for sure. And look, we're always trying to find ways to put our clients at the center of gaming. We think it's obviously really important to have our clients who are authentic gamers and who are really interested in the space. Authenticity matters, as you know. Find the right ways of participating in the ecosystem of gaming. So whether it was the Marshmello concert, whether it was, you know, someone like Dominic Fike, who's an up-and-coming artist that, you know, on the music side that we're thrilled to represent. He had an incredible debut in Fortnite during the pandemic. Or whether it's someone like Post Malone, who has a really deep love of Call of Duty, and we were able to partner him with Team Envy for him to come in as an owner. We're always looking for those opportunities across all of our respective areas. Now, the pandemic, for sure, created a heavy amount of interest from our clients who a lot of whom couldn't tour to get into the space. And, you know, we think given all the work we've done in the past on that, that there is a huge business opportunity there for our clients. And so to that end, I went out and we hired somebody great, a guy named Jeff Sawyer, who we announced a few months ago has come in. We hired him from Red Bull. To come in and oversee specifically all of our music and gaming partnerships. Given the success of Fortnite and all the work we've done with them, of course, the success of Roblox and, you know, a ton of other opportunities in the space when you see music integrations in games like NBA 2K or GTA, you know, we see that, that intersection of gaming and music really happening and coming at a really fast velocity. And we want to make sure that we're the best in the business of doing that for our clients.
Yeah. And yeah, you brought him up, but Post Malone has also been active on sort of the music collaboration front too. In February, he headlined Pokemon's 25th anniversary virtual concert. After this Jeff Sawyer hire coming from Red Bull, what do you see as, you know, sort of the future of these collaborations and finding all these different opportunities for gaming to come together with UTA's other departments and clients, and not even in terms of just music, but, you know, what's going on with looking at opportunities in the film and television spaces?
Look, there's a lot of ground to cover, and the opportunities, frankly, are really endless. And I don't just mean, you know, I'm just saying that to say that. I think we're just beginning to scratch the surface of what music and gaming integrations look like. We're not too far away from the moment where you're going to see original music by big name artists being title tracks for games in the same way they have been for film and television, for sure. I think someone, you know, what you're coming to see is someone like Post Malone, you know, doing this Pokemon collaboration. You know, he's an authentic Pokemon fan, right? That really meant a lot to him. And I think we're starting to really mine our clients across the board in terms of what are they interested in? Because as I said, gaming is a global business, right? There are games that are not popular necessarily in the US that are hugely popular in other territories. And so it's really important for us to know what our clients play, what they love. And we're going to be able to sort of make those matches organically and ensure that they're authentic for sure. On the film and TV side, you know, that's another area that we're really excited about. You know, I'd say gaming IP has always been attractive to film and television, mostly film sort of historically. I think what you're starting to see now is as new creators emerge in both mediums, right? As they mature and grow up, right? They're coming from a place where gaming became sort of a steady part of their media consumption diet, right? Like, you know, growing up, I grew up playing games. And I think as generations mature upward, it becomes less and less of a stigma about what games are relative to other medium, right? I think it's just a natural part of your, you know, media intake. And so with that, I think has come this mutual respect and admiration across both, you know, both film, television, and gaming collectively. And you're starting to see these really incredible collaborations happen. You know, the first that comes to mind is a game that I love, The Last of Us. You think of someone like Neil Druckmann pairing up with someone like Craig Mazin, and what that's going to be, right? I think there's this like mutual respect across both that is going to allow for this incredible collaboration to happen. And by the way, just last week, I think you saw, or a few weeks ago, you saw Chris Meledandri get named to the board of Nintendo. Right? Chris Meledandri, of course, runs Illumination. And so I think you're going to start to see a lot of cross-pollinization from creators on across multiple different vectors who are going to come together and create, you know, either new experiences or find ways of adapting gaming IP and bringing them to, you know, linear audiences in a much more authentic way.
True. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up The Last of Us. That's a particularly huge project coming from HBO and Sony Interactive Entertainment, which through its PlayStation Productions banner has been, you know, making a really big push to bring a lot of its original IP to various film and TV outlets. I think another very sort of chaotic development to come from this past year was the launch of all these different streaming services, you know, before the pandemic and now after it, we see NBC Universal, Warner Media, and more recently Viacom CBS, all active in the streaming space with new services. So given that there is such a high demand for content right now, has, you know, anyone been coming to your division looking to see if the gaming IP across your various clients is stuff that could present, you know, lucrative story opportunities for visual projects?
Yeah, look, I mean, the short answer is yes. And as I alluded to earlier, I think the thing that's going to be most exciting to our clients, and certainly to IP holders generally, certainly on the gaming side, is how are we going to put together a package that's going to be reflective of and be authentic to the source material itself, right? There's been no shortage of interest in gaming IP for years, right? I think the advent of these streaming services, you know, so the need for content, but also the ability that we've seen from the streaming providers themselves to give a lot of creative flexibility to their partners is also super interesting. You know, I mean, I think that the economics are always important, but I'd say as important to the economics of all this is the quality bar being set at a pretty high level for these exploitations. So we're really excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's looking ahead at the universe of gaming. Like we said earlier, it's almost approaching $200 billion in worth for the overall market. Esports in particular is projected at just over $1 billion for 2021 by Newzoo. There's just so much expansion that is really still on the way. You know, as long as video games have been around for, it really seems like, you know, we just went through the, you know, the golden age of television from 2010 to 2019, basically. It seems like the equivalent of that is, you know, fast approaching for video games in a way, but because video games have such an intrinsic virtual nature, it's, you know, it's something that does really feel endless.
Yeah, look, I mean, gaming's been growing at, if I have my numbers right, it's been growing at 11%, I think, compounded annual growth rate for over a decade at this point. You know, mobile alone last year was like $76 billion. So
yeah, mobile usually accounts for about half of the whole thing.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a market segment that didn't exist, you know, 14 years ago. So I think as you look at, you know, increased broadband globally, you know, mobile availability, 5G, you know, just an incredible amount of gaming talent that has not just come from, cities that are well known for having a high degree of gaming companies, you know, cities like Montreal or Toronto, for instance, or San Francisco, but also from universities, right? I mean, don't forget, about two decades ago, we started seeing the creation of university programs across the country, across the world, that were training, you know, students who had a real interest in learning how to make games. And they were putting out, you know, highly skilled, highly talented folks who had a deep understanding of how to make games out into this ecosystem. And as a result of that, as a result of, you know, Epic Games and Unity really coming to the forefront of the game engine, sort of off the shelf technology solution side of things, you know, distribution opening up more broadly, whether it was Steam, whether it's the console manufacturers sort of opening up their distribution capabilities to indie developers, you know, you've just seen just this incredible output of games, creativity and innovation from, you know, small teams, right? Look at the team that made Among Us is, I think, four people, right, based in Seattle. And, you know, so you're going to continue to see that kind of output. You know, you layer in new platforms, whether it's mobile, as we discussed, you know, predating that was the social, you know, social gaming on platforms like Facebook. And, you know, what's up next? I mean, AR is certainly going to be relevant. VR continues to be, you know, really, really good. And I think as those platforms and new platforms emerge, you're going to continue to see, hopefully, you know, our business continue to grow.
Yeah, there's definitely so much to look forward to. It's really just, it can go in so many different directions. But anyway, I just want to thank you for taking the time to stop and chat with here.
Corey, thanks. It's been great. I really appreciate it.
This has been another episode of Strictly Business. Come back next week for another helping of compelling conversation with media minds leading the industry. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to stay on top of future episodes. Also, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts so we can hear your feedback.